Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Willie Miller.
Hi, I'm Seth Coe.
I'm Caitlin Beckett.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Magnew.
Hi, it's Grant Haggerty.
Hi, I'm Sharon Stone from the Wallaroo.
I'm Azuma Nelson.
I'm Gashirin, and you're listening to Not the Footish.
Yeah.
Yes, you are indeed listening to another podcast of Not the Footy Show, and the Olympic Games are underway, but not without a little bit of drama along the journey. We hope you'll enjoy the show today. We've got two guests lined up for you, two guests who've unfortunately missed out on going to Rio. Anyway, I'm Ashley Morrison.
And I'm John Lee.
Well, John, the last time we spoke, we were talking about how the Russians were allowed to go, and then suddenly the IOC turns around and goes, well, actually, no, it's now up to the individual sporting bodies. And then when they get to Rio, then the IOC decides, oh, no, now we'll have our say. What a shambles.
Well, it brings up some interesting questions about who's actually in charge of these things, doesn't it?
It does indeed, and one of our guests, Austin Smith, the captain of the South African hockey team, he will actually share his thoughts on that during the interview. But I now honestly bring into question what the point of the National Olympic Committees is, because if you're suddenly deferring it to the sporting body that oversees that sport on a worldwide level, then that they must have carte blanche. But as we've discussed before, we've seen teams and individual athletes who've qualified but not been allowed to go because their National Olympic Committee decides, no, we're not going to pay for you to go. So suddenly you're going, well, hang on a sec, who really is running the ship?
Well, I wonder. I mean, if you qualify for the Olympics, who can say you can't go?
Well, your Olympic committee can stop you.
But if you qualify...
Yeah, well, they've done this in New Zealand, they've done it in South Africa, and there are other countries around the world where that has been the case. So teams and athletes have qualified, but their Olympic committee said, well, actually, no, we're not going to compete in that event.
Why would you bother qualifying if you're not going to send your team?
Yeah, and this is where, you know, I wrote a piece on the blog, notthefootyshow.com, a while ago saying, playing God with the, you know, people. Who is in charge? Surely, to me, that should be the world body. So the world body should come down, say, on South Africa, where their hockey team was not allowed to go to the Rio Olympic Games, having qualified, both the men and the women. To me, the International Hockey Federation should have turned around and said, no, these teams must go, or you're suspended from international hockey for a year. Same thing in New Zealand where they've had it with the badminton. The World Badminton Federation should have turned around to New Zealand and said, no, you must send those athletes. They've qualified.
I would put it at the onus at a higher level. I would say it's up to the IOC to turn around and tell these Olympic committees, hang on a sec, you've got a team that's qualified. If they don't go, none of the people from your country who've qualified will go. If it's not good enough for the hockey team who've qualified to go along, it's not good enough for your runners, it's not good enough for your gymnasts, it's not good enough for any other athlete. If they qualify, they go. And if the IOC took that stand, maybe we wouldn't have that this situation.
No, to me, it's very, very sad. I mean, the games have obviously gone underway, and I think two athletes that sort of show that what the Olympics means to them are, and I'm going to try and say her name, the Ukrainian gymnast, Oksana Chuzovitina, who is 41 years old, has had a child. She's one of only four gymnasts to ever compete at an Olympic Games after having a child. And she's 41 years old and is competing in the vault and made the final the other night. So, I mean, that's phenomenal. Leander Paes, the Indian tennis player, he's 43 years old. Both of them attending their seventh Olympic Games.
Wow.
As athletes.
That's incredible. I mean, for a gymnast too, at 41. In gymnastics terms, 41 would be a grandmother, wouldn't it? I mean, it's yeah. It's a young sport, gymnastics.
I mean, her story is absolutely amazing because I was reading it up last night because I couldn't believe, you know, this lady was competing in gymnastics at 41. And it comes from the Ukraine. She's competed under three or is it four different countries? Because I think she competed at, no, it was three, CIS, you know, which is the Commonwealth of Independent States in Russia, when Russia became that. Then the Ukraine, and she also competed for Germany because her son was born with a form of leukemia. and her gymnastics coach, who was German, they fundraised for her son to come to Germany to get the treatment that he required. And so she and her husband then lived in Germany, and then they she wasn't allowed to compete at one games because she hadn't lived in Germany long enough, but then she competed for Germany in the next Olympic Games. So, phenomenal story.
While we're talking about what's obviously on everybody's mind at the moment, the Olympic Games, something that just came to me that slipped entirely from the sporting world's attention in this country, Super Rugby. What happened?
Yeah, well, it was the Hurricanes who came out on top in the Lions. It was a very disappointing final, to be honest. The Lions, and I wanted to check, and I haven't done, I must admit, how many times the team that has to travel the last week to play in the finals actually come out on top, because, again, it looked like the Lions just were travel weary. And they were shattered, and they didn't really turn up. It was for a tournament that was really exciting. The week before, the semi-finals were brilliant. Taking nothing away from the Hurricanes, you know, they deserved to win, but it was just a bit of a fizzer as a final.
It was a fizzer on this part of the country because we never heard about anything. I don't know, did the ARU shut down for 6 weeks or something?
Because it was the team's out, yeah.
But
they're trying to sort out the Western Force, aren't they? So they've allowed Perth Glory to move into their offices, which a lot of people are saying now that that is the sign that the Western Force will be heading over to the East Coast after next season. And I've heard whispers that that's very much the case, that the government, who obviously built the rugby headquarters down at, when Perry Lakes left, turned around and said, well, if you're going to vacate this building, you need to get other tenants in there. And that is possibly why Perth Glory is in there. And if you think about it, Football West has been pushing for a home of football. Suddenly, if you put football and rugby all in that one building, you've ticked all the boxes as a government, and everyone will probably shut up and walk away, and the rectangular sports are all kept in one building.
Well, let's face it, they've been sidelined anyway with the news that there's not going to be retractable seats at the new stadium. Thanks, government, for selling us another puppy. Hey, good work. That's really, really disappointing. So we were promised all this wonderful stuff, and guess what? It's just going to be a football stadium after all.
Yeah, which, you know, you and I talked when we were on air at the radio station. We talked about this frequently, the amount of trips that were done by the Minister of Sport with people from Waffle and all of that. And also, if you looked at the actual report when it came out, it was so skewed towards AFL. It was not funny.
Well, good luck trying to get trying to fill a 60,000-seat stadium with the way those teams are playing at the moment. We're not going to talk about that.
But the biggest thing that is of interest with that, John, is the fact that neither of those two teams in this town have signed up yet to use the new stadium.
Well, I believe,
and this is, again, it's only what I've been told, is that the Waffle are wanting compensation from the government for the loss of revenue when those two teams leave Subiaco Oval. Now, to build that stadium and not have those two major tenants, and let's be honest, they are the major tenants because it has been built for AFL, not locked in. And if the government pays a cent to the Waffle or any of those clubs, to me, the sporting public in this state need to march on Parliament House, because that is ridiculous. The AFL has plenty of money at the top.
Absolutely.
And there is no need for the government to pay any compensation.
Absolutely, there's plenty of money. And let's face it, football was the sport that screamed most. Well, did you not consider that that would have happened when you were screaming out for your new stadium? Oh, we can't do it at Domain. Domain sucks.
But don't forget, I think they were expecting they were going to get the management contract as they had at Subiaco Oval. And, of course, they haven't got that.
Well, good. They shouldn't have the management contract on a multi-sport venue.
Exactly.
Well, it's not going to be a multi-sport venue anymore, because who's going to go and want to watch rugby when you're sitting? It'll be the same as Domain. You'll be in the same situation going to watch rugby there as you were at Subiaco Oval. Terrible.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Jacobi from Germany, playing for the Delhi Wave Riders. You're hearing Not the Footy Show.
Anyway, we probably should get to our first guest. And as I mentioned, poor old South Africa qualified for the Rio Olympic Games in the sport of field hockey, but their Olympic committee decided that they were not going to send a team. Now, I've done some commentary work with their captain, Austin Smith, and I thought it'd be really good to catch up and hear his side of the story from a player's perspective. So I caught up with Austin just recently. Austin Smith, welcome back to Not the Footy Show.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ashley.
Well, Austin, obviously the Olympics are about to get underway and it must be a really, really tough time for you and all your South African teammates because it's not injury that's ruled you out like some poor players, but it's politics.
Yeah, it's been pretty strange and quite frustrating looking at my Facebook profile, and I'm a friend of a lot of the players, especially after the Hockey India League. We know a lot of the guys, and seeing everyone jetting off to Rio, it does leave you with a bit of a lump in your throat.
For those of our listeners that aren't aware what happened, can you maybe give us a bit of background as to how the decision was reached to not send South Africa's men's or women's team?
Yeah, I can try my best, actually. I'm still not 100% sure I understand it completely. But basically what happened is we qualified through our Continental Cup by winning the Africa Cup. We qualified to play at the Olympics. But our Olympic Association, SASCOC, said that tournament wasn't a good enough indication that we were good enough to play at the Olympics. And they set us an additional target, which was coming inside the top six at the World League semi-finals. And we didn't even qualify for the World League semi-finals in the end. And, they decided that we weren't good enough to compete at the Rio Olympics, even though we had actually officially qualified.
But your women's team actually did okay at the Hockey World League semi-finals.
Yeah, in the end, SASCOC said that they had to have finished one place higher. So, even more agonizingly close for our ladies' side because, they did actually do quite well.
It just seems to me that there's a real sort of blurring of the lines in that, the IOC ask the various sporting bodies, and hockey's not the only one, to come up with a qualification process, but then they allow the Olympic committees to override that. Do you feel maybe the FIH should have stepped in and said, no, these have qualified, so they're going?
Yeah, sadly, at the end of the day, the decision goes to the Olympic Association of each country. The invitation was sent by the FIH to SASCOC, and they then have the choice to accept it or deny it, like they have with every other sport. Personally, I feel like if you qualify, you have the right to go to the Olympics. And I don't feel like your Olympic Association should then be able to come up with different criteria. I think the criteria that are set by the IOC should be the criteria that are adhered to by everyone. So, I'm still pretty disappointed by the decision by our Olympic Association. And, I have some questions about how hard our actual association worked to fight for that and to put pressure on the FIH. But at the end of the day, our Olympic Association, they make the decision. And as much as we fought and the petition that we raised that gained more than 16,000 signatures, which for hockey I think is quite a lot in South Africa, they made the decision not to send us.
Yeah, I mean, it just baffles me. I just think that, if the Olympics are going to be more professional, so by that I mean have professionally run sports participating, then surely maybe it's time to do away with these Olympic committees in the various countries and let the various world bodies, they have their qualification, you meet that criteria, they send the invitation to the individual or to the sporting body, and then it's up to them if they want to go rather than this third party.
Well, that would make more sense because in every other tournament, if we qualify for a World Cup or World League, the invitation is sent to our hockey body, SAHA. So that would make more sense. I don't really know what the job of our Olympic Association is. They only seem to pop up when it comes to Olympics and Commonwealth Games. And with all due respect, I haven't had the best experience when I've worked with this organization before in the past in South Africa. Compared to when I've been to FIH events and when I've worked through SAR, things have been a lot smoother and a lot easier. So I'm not really sure why we suddenly need this body to jump in and control everything. As you say, it seemed like it would be much easier if the invitation went straight to the FIH and then straight to our National Hockey Association.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, obviously you're very upset, but you've been fortunate that, you know, you've played as a South African in the Hockey India League. You currently ply your trade in the Netherlands, but I would think that there's a fair percentage of your team that are stuck in South Africa, and they must be absolutely devastated at this decision, and because it will limit their opportunities to showcase their skills and get the chances that you've been given.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, especially with the Hockey India League, a lot of the discussions that I had with people and with coaches happened just after the London Olympics. So I was able to play there and show people, okay, yeah, South Africa, we're ranked quite low in the world, but we do have a lot of players who are talented. And that's kind of how I got picked up. And yeah, playing in the Hockey League, Hockey India League, has been one of the best experiences of my life, for sure. And yeah, I think what's more sad is that I've been to two Olympics, and I know how incredible the experience is, and the feeling of going into the opening ceremony, of playing, of just being part of the whole experience. And to know that our younger players in South Africa are going to miss out on that, something that I've been to, yeah, that really hurts, because I know that there are guys in South Africa who would, cheapers, they would do anything to be able to do that. And I can look at them saying, yeah, I know what you're missing out on, and it's really demoralizing.
Are there any of them that have felt, well, forget it, I'm leaving the sport now, I'll go and do something else? Because, you know, again, hockey's not a high-paid game, and it shows, just like all the others, you have to be extremely dedicated to even get to the stage where you're qualifying for Olympics.
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly what the impact is going to be, because, yeah, junior players now, I can see, are choosing more for study and looking more towards their career instead of thinking, okay, well, the next 4 years I'm really going to push it, because those guys have just been to the Olympics and I see how incredible that experience is going to be. So I think the after effect is perhaps going to be even worse than it looks right now, because, yeah, guys won't be going back to their provinces, to their individual team, their club teams in South Africa, wherever they're playing, and telling other people. They aren't going to schools to share the excitement of playing in the Olympics. And yeah, part of me is worried that we may miss a generation of hockey players purely because we don't have that excitement of players playing at the Olympics. Because yeah, as a hockey player, that is your pinnacle, especially as a South African, because you spend a ton of money having to play for South Africa. But if you see the Olympics as the carrot at the end of the road, you really think it's worthwhile to take time off work and to pay your own money to go to camps and things like that.
No, it's very, very hard. And of course, the other thing that was almost like a kick in the guts was then the announcement that, is it 2017 will be the year of hockey in South Africa?
Yeah, that's that's another one that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, that 6 months before we hear that we're not good enough and that SANSCOC doesn't want to support us, and then yeah, a few months later suddenly it's the year of hockey in South Africa and they're giving us 10 million rand to start up our own kind of domestic league, which all the provinces will play almost like a franchise system, where for a month we'll fly up every weekend to play against each other. So that's a little bit bizarre, and a lot of players, not everyone is actually even that excited about it, and they think, well, yeah, well, what's the point now? We could have used that money, if you said that cost was a reason, we could have rather used that money to go to the Olympics, and that would have made far more of an impact on hockey than the National League. So yeah, I'm still not quite sure what's going on behind the scenes to prompt that.
With this league, I mean, do you see foreign players coming in like you've got in the Hockey India League, that there will be, you know, a percentage of foreign players to maybe, I don't mean to put South Africa down, but raise the standard and also raise the profile?
No, we desperately need players to come over. It's a brilliant idea. That's something that I've suggested as well, to try and get at least one or two foreign players in each team, just to try and add some experience. A lot of the problem that we have in South Africa is that not many players play overseas, so we're kind of stuck with the same ideas. In every province, in every club team, guys are playing a similar structure with similar ideas. So it would be great to get a mix of foreign players and just bring in some different some ideas, some fresh ideas. But personally, I haven't heard that much information about it yet. It's supposed to be run around August, September time. So I'm personally not going to be there. because I'm preparing here for my national league where, yeah, where the quality is going to be better here. And as much as I would like to play in that league, it would mean giving up, playing in Holland, which for me is a long-term commitment. And for a month, I'm not going to fly back just for that competition. So yeah, the timing, I question again the timing. That tournament should be run in December or June, July, when all international players are available.
No, certainly interesting times ahead. I've got to ask this question. Are you going to be watching the Olympics, or is it going to be too painful to sit on your sofa and watch?
It's going to be very painful watching, but I still love watching hockey. I still love playing, so I'm definitely going to be watching as a spectator, and I hope I can enjoy the Olympic experience, because when you're there as a player, you don't get to see any other events, really, like a little bit here and there on TV, and maybe if you're lucky enough, you get tickets to go to one event. So I feel like the last two Olympics, I haven't seen the opening ceremony, just besides when I was walking, which obviously was fantastic, but it would be great to actually just watch the whole Olympics and get the experience and be a spectator and just enjoy the sporting event.
Well, Austin, good to catch up with you again. It's a very sad state of affairs for you, your fellow players in South Africa, male and female, and hopefully it won't happen in 4 years' time.
No, I certainly hope not. No, let's hope I'm still around to to play in the next one.
I'm Azuma Nelson, and you are listening to Not the Footy Show.
Well, John, I can't help feeling so sorry for all of the South African athletes who've missed out. You know, they've dedicated themselves to qualify, they've qualified, and then they don't go because of what appears to be a political decision. Now, you know, I've written a book about the Kookaburras, Australia's hockey grail, about how hard it is to win a medal, and yet the media in this country expect Australia to win gold, or the Kookaburras to win gold every Olympics. The very interesting thing is in 1980, when there was the boycott because of the Russian invasion of Afghanistan, it's interesting talking to the competitors that were picked for that Olympics and then they didn't go. And they were saying that lack of going in the 4 years really put Australian hockey behind, that it had a massive impact because there were then guys that had would probably have retired after 1980, but they wanted to keep going to 84. So they were a little bit too old. But then also the young ones coming through, there were not the amount of people to be able to pass on what the Olympics was all about, how you prepare for it. And so they said this was a real dip in Australia's progress. And I just worry that, all right, they're investing money in this league in South Africa, but how much by not going to Rio is going to impact on the sport in South Africa? I think it's going to have a massive impact.
Well, if I'm an athlete and I've busted my gut, and let's face it, at hockey at that sort of level, you're not making a lot of money. You're busting your gut for nothing, really, for the pride of your country. And that they turn around after you've done everything that's been asked and required of you and say, oh, well, you're not going, I'd be speaking to a lawyer. I'd be going straight for the lawyers and taking these administrators on, because that is just blatantly wrong. And so I just can't imagine that, having done all that work, these people can, with a straight face, turn around and say, no, you're not going.
But the other thing I
they
find...
They should all lose their jobs. Anybody responsible for that decision should be out of their job.
But the thing I find interesting is it appears again that the government has sort of softened the blow by putting this money into this league in South Africa, which is identical to what the government did to the hockey here when they didn't go in 1980. And if you read the book, it'll tell the story. I don't want to spoil it completely, but there was an incentive given to, at the time, the Australian Hockey Association not to go to the Olympic Games in 1980, and the government paid for them to do a tour of Europe the following year, which all the players say was the most, well, the biggest waste of time ever.
You can never, you can't buy that back off people. You cannot buy that opportunity off them, because it doesn't come around often enough. You know, I'm selected for the Olympic Games, great, I put on all this hard work, I've spent 8 years of my life dedicated to this. Oh, sorry, you're not going because we've decided you can't go. Well, why did you put me through 8 years of this hell trying to qualify Why would you bother doing that? It's just staggeringly dumb decision.
Well, the one thing just changing tack now that I'm actually quite pleased is to see some of the shooters and the archery for Australia getting medals who are minor sports. And you wonder, well, okay, if there's this, the win at all costs thing, I've forgotten what the program's called with the Australian Sports Council now, Winning Edge program.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So you sort of think, well, okay, are you now going to put, because we've won gold, are you going to invest more money into those sports? I'll bet you they don't get much more money, and the money still goes into swimming and all of those various sports.
Yeah, I wonder how much the broadcasters end up with. I just get a feeling that the sports that get the most money are the sports the broadcasters want to show. And I'm not sure how much Olympic athletes get, not just for competing, but, you know, the individual sports decide how much is doled out to the individual athletes.
I think you're right that the sporting profile of a sport on television or in the media as a whole has a massive impact.
Oh, it does. And it's interesting that swimming seems to be the golden sport that Australians hang themselves on. And Australia's had a strong heritage in swimming, but I wouldn't say it's anywhere near the sport that it was 20 years ago.
No, but I think because, again, if you look at the sports, science has moved on and has caught up with a lot of the Australian developments, the way people train, the nutrition. And if you look at a lot of those ones that were the forerunners are now working overseas and helping the programs there.
The nature of sport has changed in this country. People don't go swimming the same way they used to go swimming. It's not the be-all and end-all sport of water sports anymore. There's a whole lot of other things you can do in the water, and that's what people are doing now. Swimming, the media thinks it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but the rest of the society doesn't.
Dare I say the media in Australia at times is very lazy, so they just go with the easiest thing. Some of the comments that have been made about the Olympic Games, which have just been factually incorrect, and yet you've had how many months to prepare for the Games, and we've got people talking about stuff on TV, and people in their living rooms will believe it because that's what they've told them. And I'm sitting there going, that's wrong, that's wrong.
If I want to sit down and listen to a broadcaster who hasn't been on air for quite some time, and I want to listen to an ex-athlete who hasn't been around the place for some time, if I want to sit there and listen to them chat, I'll just go down the pub and invite them along for a beer. If I'm watching a sporting event, I want you to commentate on the sporting event, not just dilly-dally around and tell stories. It's really irritating. Talk to me about the sport that's going on in front of my eyes and don't say things that are wrong in front of my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, last night watching again, Channel 7, you have to keep switching channels to whichever because the sport changed. There was the gymnastics, it was on one of their channels. Then they go, it's now going on to this one. So you have to change channel. And then they show for the next 4 minutes what you've just watched. Yet supposedly, we're watching it live.
Well, Channel 7's trying to drive you to their website because they want to charge you. And if you go to their website, you can watch the sport, blah, blah, at whatever time. You don't have to change channels. You don't have to do that. They're trying to drive people onto their devices. That can be the only explanation because that's what they are charging for.
Well, the interesting thing with that is looking on social media, people are absolutely slamming the app. Because they're saying it just keeps buffering or it keeps dropping out. And I mean, I think it was on Sunday I was just trawling through, just looking at the reactions to it. And everyone was just saying it was appalling, it was terrible. So you just think, well, it seems to me Channel 7 have put a lot of money into this, but they've got it horribly, horribly wrong.
Well, as soon as you start talking internet stuff, you know, wireless or cable, whatever you talk, there's only a certain amount of data. It's not like free-to-air broadcasting where you can just put an antenna up and send it out and whoever wants it can get it. Okay, there's only a certain bandwidth and all those sorts of rubbish things they talk about. Okay, so Channel 7 go, we'll put this app up and we reckon, we'll get 30 people watching or how many, the number they pick out. But obviously, they've sadly underestimated the number of people that are going to be wanting to use their service. That's why the buffering happens.
I think people are going to the app because what's on the TV is just such a sort of... It's just, there's no consistency. They're bouncing around from thing to thing and you can't actually get into it, you know?
Well, especially over the weekend when they're trying to squeeze in their other programming.
Well, yeah, I was watching, suddenly it goes to AFL. No, there was no announcement that they're going to the AFL. Just suddenly it changed.
And the AFL is being shown on different channels. So instead of just going, okay, all the AFL games we show during this period of time, we'll show them on 7, mate. No, they're one, yesterday's game or whatever it was, Sunday's game was on at channel, the main channel 7. Another game was on 7, mate. There was one, Friday night's game was on 7-2, which never shows football. So there's no, like you say, there's no consistency for viewers to hang on to and know that that's going to be there or that's going to be there.
Yeah, but I mean, have you been able to find, when you know an event's taking place, have you been able to find which channel it's on and at what time?
No.
Yeah. It's...
And I'm really intrigued by the definition of the word live. I want to know what live means. I mean, that's been a bugbear of me with television stations for a while now, but it's really irritating at the Olympic Games when you're told, and not for the first time, something's live, when you know it's not because you already know the result. Yeah. Or, you know, that's really irritating.
Hi, I'm Seb Coe, and you're listening to Not The Footy Show.
We should probably turn our attention now to our second guest, also comes from the world of hockey, and that is the Kookaburras third choice goalkeeper, Tristan Clemens. Now, the reason I wanted to catch up with Tristan is, obviously, it's very tricky when you're one of three players vying for one position, because teams only take one goalkeeper to the Olympic Games, and a really difficult position when you're training together, and the three goalkeepers for Australia, Tyler Lovell, Andrew Charter and Tristan, all get on exceptionally well. And Tyler Lovell has gone as a backup player should Andrew Charter get injured, whereas poor old Tristan is left here. And I wondered whether he felt, like a lot of nations, they should just go with two goalkeepers in the squad or should they go with three. So we'll hear what Tristan Clemens thinks about that and also a new business that he's just launched, which is perfect for summer. Tristan Clemens, welcome back to Not The Footy Show.
It's good to be here, Ash. Thanks very much for having me back again.
Well, I feel very sorry for you because obviously with the Kookaburras, three goalkeepers, but only one gets to go and then another as a reserve. And sadly, you're the man left at home.
That's right. Yeah, I kind of lost the three-horse race there. It's look, we knew that going in 7 months ago when we started the Olympic training program. And, you know, it's part and parcel of our position. Only one gets to go and play in the Olympics and when we know that. But I think having three of us in the group has been really good in terms of driving each other and making sure we've got the best out of our goalkeeping group going to Rio.
One thing it appears from the outside looking in is that the three of you actually get on very well.
Yeah, we are pretty good mates. Like Tyler and myself, both being from WA, we've played a lot of hockey together growing up through the underage tournaments. And Charts and Tyler and myself, we've all been together for the last sort of 6 or 7 years at the national level. So we know each other really well. We know what makes each other tick, which is probably important. But we also know how to look after each other. And that's been a really important part of this last 7 months.
Was there a bit of tension between the three of you as Olympic selection got closer?
Yeah, I think there's a tension in the whole group as the Olympic selections get closer, but especially in our own little goalkeeper group. But I think that was one of the advantages of having three of us in the group, was that we were able to sort of keep an eye on each other. So if there was an issue between, say, me and one of the other guys, the third party would come in and help you out, and likewise if it was the other way around. So we always had a mediator there with three of us, which worked out well.
I mean, it would be very easy to turn around and say, okay, that's it now. I'm going to turn away and concentrate on my career. But are you going to keep going?
Yeah, for me, if you had have asked me 8-9 months ago, I would have said that I'd go to the Rio campaign, and regardless of being picked or not, I would have called it at this time. But I've had so much fun over the last 7 months, and you know, it's a true privilege to be involved in the elite training environment that is the Kookaburras. And so I'm keen to push on for another 2 years with the draw card of a World Cup in 2018, and also the home Commonwealth Games being on the Gold Coast. A couple of big carrots there I wouldn't mind getting to. So.
I mean, it must have been difficult for you because you're also working at UWA, and have they been very understanding?
Yeah, I'm really fortunate. My research position here at UWA is funded by a federal scholarship, and I was able to apply for them for a special consideration to have that suspended while I train full-time for the Olympic preparation. So I've been really lucky that the NHMRC, which is my funding body, and also the university have been really supportive of my hockey pursuits. And, you know, I'm lucky as well that my coaches understand that my research is really important to me, and they allow me, you know, some leniency in that as well. So I'm fortunate that I haven't had to make a decision as yet to just be on the research train or to be just in the hockey camp. And hopefully I can do that for another 2 years.
I would have thought, though, it's actually quite a nice break away from hockey because it's something so completely different.
Yeah, I honestly believe that they both benefit each other. For me, to be able to, if I've had a bad day on the training track, to be able to get into the lab and work on something that's really meaningful for me. At the moment, I'm working on burns treatments and looking at ways we can improve wound healing following major burn trauma. So I think that's really useful work, and also can have a real impact on our society. So it's easy to find relevance to that. And likewise, if you've had a bad day in the lab and you've had your experiments fail, it's nice to get out and let off some steam on the hockey pitch.
Sure it is, but you've also got another little side business going, Get Flapped.
Yeah, you're right. Get Flapped has just launched in the last month. That's been pretty exciting for me. So, look, ever since school days, I've loved the Legionnaire hat or the flap hat. And I just think we've never had the opportunity to have them in some fancy and funky prints, so I'm trying to bring that back. And, look, it's a functional hat, and we know in Australia that there's a lot of sun, and in the summer it's a pretty harsh summer we have here, so being able to slip, slop and flap now is really helpful.
I mean, you're obviously in the health industry, and so it is important. I mean, a friend of mine has just actually had some of his ear removed because of skin cancer, and it does feel that we're getting hotter summers. So these are really important now.
Yeah, look, I really think that I think the message is getting out to the public now that it's not cool to tan or to cook for looks, for example. You know, we really want to make sure that we are protecting our skin. And obviously, I know how important the skin is through my research in burns trauma as well. So the skin is a fantastic organ that we really kind of take for granted, and we need to make sure we look after it. And so sun protection is really important, especially in Australia's harsh, dry climate in the summer.
Has it been hard to convince the Kookaburras to wear it? Because I've seen a few pictures of your teammates wearing the flap hats.
No, I think because the project's been probably, I'd say, 12 months in the making, it's been a long time for me to build up the suspense. So I think the boys are just pretty excited to have them actually here and get a few on their heads. Look, no, I've been really, really fortunate. I've had the support from the Kookaburras boys and all the hockey family, I guess, in WA here are really getting behind me. And look, as I said, I think it's a practical hat, so I think it's got some legs in it. We'll see how we go.
So what's up with you now for the Olympics? I mean, are you going to be watching it, or is it going to be too painful to watch?
Yeah, look, I think for me, we're still in training right up until the 4th of August, just in case there's an injury. There still can be changes made right up until that first day of the Olympics. So we want to make sure we're ready to go if needed. And then for me, I'll probably take a couple of days off just as the Olympics starts, and then get back into work. Obviously, the labs missed me for the last 7 months, so I'm pretty keen to get back in and get some work done there. And also, I'll get right behind watching the boys on the telly sort of thing and making sure they've got all my support going forward for the gold medal.
It's going to be tough this time with quarterfinals coming into the Olympics. Makes it a very, very different tournament.
Well, it does, and it definitely makes, I guess, it more of an opportunity for those teams that might not be in the Big Four, for example. You know, that you don't have to finish top of your pool or second in your pool to be an opportunity. You can finish below that and make it into the quarters. So, look, and anything can happen on any day, and that's what I think is so interesting about international hockey at the moment, that if you're not on your game, and especially for that quarter, semi and final, any team in the top 10 can probably pip you, which is going to be at the Olympics. And, look, I expect there'll be some upsets. Let's just hope they're not against the Kookaburras.
The one thing about the Kookaburras is they always play to win. Now, I did the Junior Asia Cup, I was commentating that, and it was interesting because there were certain teams like Japan did not want to win their last game because of who they would have to meet in their semi-final. So do you think other teams may look at that going into the final round of games and go, you know what, it's better off if we get a draw here so that we don't meet Australia in the quarters?
Yeah, look, I think we're the world number one team going to the Olympics, right? So I don't think we'll be worrying about that as a team. There might be other teams that might worry about having to face us at some point, but in reality, you've got to have to win those last three games. You've got to win your quarter, win your semi, and win your final, and you know they're going to be against tough opponents regardless of who they would be and their actual world standing, because the Olympics is always a different kettle of fish and it could always change. You might be ranked 10th, but you can still get up there and beat one of the top teams. So something Australia wouldn't worry about, but maybe teams would worry about facing us. I could see that.
The one thing that people do seem to always underestimate is how hard it is to win an Olympic medal, and the Kookaburras are always expected to. Is that something that you talked about as a group preparing for the Games?
Interesting, I guess, for me, I was around for the 2012 prep as a development athlete and also now I've been full-time with the Kookaburras leading into the Rio campaign. If anything, I could say that the group is much more prepared for this Rio campaign, you know, in terms of handling that expectation maybe and handling that external pressure. But in reality, we all know we've got a job to do and we know how to do that. We just need to go out and execute the next 2 weeks.
Well, let's hope they can.
That's it, mate. We're waiting to see. Hopefully they can get the gold and we can bring it back here to Australia.
Thanks very much, Tristan.
Cheers, Ash. Thanks for your time.
Hi, I'm Thomas of Hitman Hearn, and you are listening to Not the Foodie Show.
Well, that was Tristan Clemens, and as we know, he's got a dual career working at the University of WA in research, and very interesting career there with the Burns unit, and also his new business, Get Flapped. And if you want one of those Foreign Legion hats that were trendy in a trendy design, get one for summer and you'll be supporting one of your top athletes in Australia. The website is getflapped.com and there are at the moment 3 designs for adults and 3 designs for children, and there are discounts if you buy more than one hat. And I can honestly say I bought one.
You obviously got the Buffhead design.
I got the tribal.
The tribal, did you?
You know I'm a little bit wild at times.
Oh, yeah. Crazy Ash.
Now, one man that has actually made the Chinese crazy is our very first gold medal winner, Mac Horton, with his comments about the man he defeated in the final, and that was Sun Yang calling him a drug cheat. Now, it's been really interesting, I think, John, to see the way this has panned out. Because as far as I can see, Mac Horton said nothing that was untoward when you consider that Sun Yang had actually been suspended for testing positive to drugs. But the Chinese are very upset, as we know. They've said, we think this is inappropriate words, greatly hurt the feelings between Chinese and Australian swimmers. It is proof of a lack of good manners and upbringing. We strongly demand an apology from this swimmer. Now, the AOC have backed up Mac Horton and they've come out and said, Mac is entitled to express this point of view. Under the team values summed up by the acronym ASPIRE, the E stands for express yourself. That is his right. He has spoken out in support of clean athletes. This is something he feels strongly about, and good luck to him. Now, the interesting thing about that is I would love to know if an athlete turned around and spoke out against the AOC, whether they'd still take the same position.
No, of course they wouldn't. I mean, in some ways, they've got to back their athlete, because what he said is factually correct, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, nobody should be really complaining. And, I mean, China, I think, I understand where they're coming from, but I don't think they've really got a leg to stand on.
Well, no. I mean, I just... My thoughts run back to being able to drink Chinese milk. I mean, when things are that bad, I don't think you should be running around telling people off for stuff.
Well, we should probably bring this podcast to an end. But just before we go, we will be streaming the finals of the Smarter Than Smoking WA Netball League this Friday night and the following Friday night, and then with the final on the Sunday. And also just to tell all of our listeners that there will be something coming out on the website which is going to be called the Hungry Games, where we're catching up with WA Olympians who you may walk past in the street and never know that they've been to an Olympic Games, because there's plenty of them around. And so we're going to be posting up on the website and on our Facebook page throughout the Olympic Games interviews with some of these athletes, which we hope you'll enjoy. And they will be video versions filmed at various cafes and restaurants and bars around Perth.
Some people are on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is.
See ya. We'll be back next week.